Interlude, The Lady of the Long Silence. 1. Jean Tannen entered the service of the Death Goddess about half a year after Locke returned from his sojourn in the priesthood of Nara, with the usual instructions to learn what he could and then return home in 5 or 6 months. He used the assumed name Tavrin Kallus, and he travelled south from Camor for more than a week to reach the great temple of Azaguia, known as Revelation House. Unlike the other 11 or 12 orders of Therin clergy, the servants of Azaguia began their initiation in only one place. The coastal highlands that rose south of Talisham ended at vast, straight white cliffs that fell 300 or 400 feet to the crashing waves of the Iron Sea. Revelation House was carved from one of these cliffs, facing out to sea, on a scale that recalled the work of the Eldrin, but was accomplished, gradually and painstakingly, in an ongoing process, solely with human arts. Picture a number of deep rectangular galleries dug straight back into the cliff, connected solely by exterior means. To get anywhere in Revelation House, one had to venture outside, onto the walkways, stairs, and carved stone ladders, regardless of the weather or the time of day. Safety rails were unknown to Revelation House. Initiates and teachers alike scuttled along in light or darkness, in rain or bright clear skies, with no barrier between themselves and a plunge to the sea, save their own confidence and good fortune. 12 tall excised columns to the west of Revelation House held brass bells at the top. These open-faced rock tubes, about 6 feet deep and 70 feet high, had slender hand and footholds carved into their rear walls. At dawn and dusk, initiates were expected to climb them and ensure that each bell was rung 12 times, once for each god in the pantheon. The carillon was always somewhat ragged. When Jean thought he could get away with it, he rang his own bell 13 times. 3 initiates plunged to their deaths attempting to perform this ritual before Jean had passed his first month at the temple. This number struck him as surprisingly low, given how many of the devotional duties of Azaguia's new servants, not to mention the architecture of their home, were clearly designed to encourage premature meetings with the Death Goddess.
"We are concerned here with death considered in 2 aspects. Death the transition and death everlasting," said one of their lecturers, an elderly priestess with 3 braided silver collars at the neck of her black robe. "Death everlasting is the realm of the Lady Most Kind. It is a mystery not intended for penetration or comprehension from our side of the Lady's shroud. Death the transition, therefore, is the sole means by which we may achieve a greater understanding of her dark majesty. Your time here in Revelation House will bring you close to Death the Transition on many occasions, and it is a certainty that some of you will pass beyond before you finish your initiation. This may be achieved through inattentiveness, lassitude, ill fortune, or the inscrutable will of the Lady Most Kind herself. As initiates of the Lady, you will be exposed to death, the transition, and its consequences for the rest of your lives. You must grow accustomed to it. It is natural for living flesh to recoil from the presence of death and from thoughts of death. Your discipline must overcome what is natural.
2. As with most Therin temples, initiates of the first inner mystery were mostly expected to train their scribing, sums, and rhetoric to the point that they could enter higher levels of study without distracting more advanced initiates. Jean, with his advantages in age and training, was inducted into the second inner mystery a bare month and a half after arrival.
"Henceforth," said the priest conducting the ceremony, "you will conceal your faces. You will have no features of boy or girl, man or woman. The priesthood of the Lady Most Kind has only one face, and that face is inscrutable. We must not be seen as individuals, as fellow men and women. The office of the death goddess servants must disquiet if those we minister to are to compose their thoughts to her properly. The sorrowful visage was the silver mask of the Order of Azaguia. For initiates, it bore a crude resemblance to a human face, with a rough indentation for the nose and holes for the eyes and mouth. For full priests, it was a slightly ovoid hemisphere of fine silver mesh. Jean donned his sorrowful visage, eager to get to work cataloguing more secrets of the order, only to discover that his duties were little changed from his month as an initiate of the first inner mystery. He still carried messages and scribed scrolls, swept floors and scoured the kitchens, still scurried up and down the precarious rock ladders beneath the bells of the 12, with the unfriendly sea crashing far below and the wind tugging at his robes. Only now he had the honour of doing all these things in his silver mask, with his peripheral vision partly blocked. Two more initiates of the second inner mystery fell to a first-hand acquaintance with Death the Transition shortly after Jean's elevation. About a month after that, Jean was poisoned for the first time. 3.
"Closer and closer," said the priestess, whose voice seemed muffled and distant. "Closer and closer to Death the Transition, to the very edge of the mystery. Feel your limbs growing cold. Feel your thoughts slowing. Feel the beating of your heart growing sluggish. The warm humours are banking down. The fire of life is fading."
She had given them some sort of green wine, a poison that Jean could not identify. Each of the dozen initiates of the second inner mystery in his morning class lay prostrated and twitching feebly, their silver masks staring fixedly upward as they could no longer move their necks. Their instructor hadn't quite managed to explain what the wine would do before she ordered them to drink it. Jean suspected that the willingness of the initiates around him to dance gaily on the edge of Death the Transition was still more theory than actuality. "Of course, look who knows so much better," he thought to himself, as he marvelled at how tingly and distant his legs had become. "Crooked warden, this priesthood is crazy. Give me strength to live and I'll return to the gentleman bastards, where life makes sense." Yes, where he lived in a secret elderglass cellar beneath a rotting temple, pretending to be a priest of Perelandro, while taking weapons lessons from the Duke's personal swordmaster. Perhaps a bit drunk on whatever drug was having its way with him, Jean giggled. The sound seemed to echo and reverberate in the low-ceilinged study hall. The priestess turned slowly. The sorrowful visage concealed her true expression, but in his drug-hazed mind, Jean was certain he could feel her burning stare.
"An insight, Tavrin?"
He couldn't help himself. He giggled again. The poison seemed to be making merry with the tight-lipped inhibition he'd feigned since arriving at the temple.
"I saw my parents burned to death," he said. "I saw my cats burned to death. Do you know the noise a cat makes when it burns?"
Another damn giggle. He almost choked on his own spit in surprise.
"I watched and could do nothing. Do you know where to stab a man? To bring death now, or death in a minute, or death in an hour? I do."
He would have been rolling with laughter if he could move his limbs. As it was, he shuddered and twitched his fingers.
"Lingering death? 2 or 3 days of pain? I can give that too. Ah! Death the Transition? We're old friends."
The priestess' mask fixed directly on him. She stared for several drug-lengthened moments while Jean thought, "Oh, gods damn this stuff, I've already done it now."
"Tavrin," said the priestess, "when the effects of the emerald wine have passed, remain here. The High Proctor will speak to you then."
Jean lay in mingled bemusement and dread for the rest of the morning. The giggles still came, interspersed with bouts of drunken self-loathing. So much for a full session of work. Some false facer I turned out to be.
That night, much to his surprise, he was confirmed as having passed into the third inner mystery of Azaguia.
I knew we could expect exceptional things from you, Callus, said the High Proctor, a bent old man whose voice wheezed behind his sorrowful visage. First, the extraordinary diligence you showed in your mundane studies, and your rapid mastery of the exterior rituals. Now, a vision during your very first anguishment. You are marked, marked, an orphan who witnessed the death of his mother and father. You were fated to serve the Lady Most Kind.
What are the additional duties of an initiate of the third inner mystery?
Why, anguishment, said the High Proctor. A month of anguishment, a month of exploration into death, the transition. You shall take the emerald wine once again, and then you shall experience other means of closeness to the precipitous moment of the lady's embrace. You shall hang from silk until nearly dead. You shall be exsanguinated. You shall take up serpents, and you shall swim in the night ocean, wherein dwell many servants of the lady. I envy you, little brother. I envy you, newly born to our mysteries.
Jean fled Revelation House that very night. He packed his meager bag of belongings and raided the kitchens for food. Before entering Revelation House, he'd buried a small bag of coins beneath a certain landmark about a mile inland from the cliffs near the village of Sorrow's Ease, which supplied the cliffside temple's material wants. That money should suffice to get him back to Camor. He scrawled a note and left it on his sleeping pallet in the fresh new solitary chamber accorded to him for his advanced rank. Grateful for opportunities, but could not wait, have elected to seek the state of death everlasting, cannot be content with the lesser mysteries of death the transition. The lady calls. Tavryn Callus. He climbed the stone stairs for the last time, as the waves crashed in the darkness below. The soft red glow of alchemical storm lamps guided him to the top of Revelation House, and thence to the top of the cliffs, where he vanished unseen into the night. 4.
Damn, said Galdo, when Jean had finished his tale. I'm glad I got sent to the Order of Sendivani.
The night of Jean's return, after Father Chains had grilled Jean in depth on his experiences at Revelation House, he'd let the four boys head up to the roof with clay mugs of warm Camori ale. They sat out beneath the stars and the scattered silver clouds, sipping their ale with much exaggerated casualness. They savored the illusion that they were men, gathered of their own accord, with the hours of the night theirs to spend entirely at their own whim.
No shit, said Carlo. In the Order of Gandolo, we got pastries and ale every second week, and a copper piece every idler's day to spend as we wished. You know, for the Lord of Coin and Commerce.
I'm particularly fond of our priesthood of the benefactor, said Locke, since our main duties seem to be sitting around and pretending that the benefactor doesn't exist, when we're not stealing things, that is.
Too right, said Galdo. Death priesting is for morons.
But still, asked Carlo, didn't you wonder if they might not be right?
He sipped his ale before continuing.
That you might really be fated to serve the Lady Most Kind?
I had a long time to think about it on the way back to Camor, said Jean, and I think they were right, just maybe not the way they thought.
How do you mean?
The Sansa spoke in unison, as they often did when true curiosity seized the pair of them at once. In reply, Jean reached behind his back, and from out of his tunic he drew a single hatchet, a gift from Don Maranzala. It was plain and unadorned, but well maintained and ideally balanced for someone who'd not yet come into his full growth. Jean set it on the stones of the temple roof and smiled.
Oh,
said Carlo and Galdo.